Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking to the United States and crunching the numbers when it comes to inflation. It's been rising for a few months now, so is this a sign that, as some have suggested, the Fed is somewhat behind the curve? Or could it be that the end of the economic cycle is nigh? Maybe it's somewhere between the two. All will hopefully be revealed. We'll also consider how good the economists and analysts are at reading the inflationary tea leaves. And we'll hear from our experts this week on where they think inflation in the United States could be going next. We start today's programme in conversation with Mike Ryan, Chief Investment Strategist for Wealth Management Americas at UBS. We asked Mike whether he agreed that the persistent rise in inflation over recent months is indeed a sign that the Fed is behind the curve.
I'd actually read it a little differently. I think what you're finally starting to see now is that deflationary headwinds, which have really buffeted not only the U.S. economy but the global economy, are finally starting to abate. Keep in mind that the U.S. has had this unique aspect where you've had the strength of the dollar and declining energy prices have continued to push price pressures lower. In fact, what we've seen is the absence of inflation has actually created a different set of problems for the Fed. So I would argue now that the dissipation of some of those deflationary headwinds and first time some evidence now that we're starting to see a healthier, more normal rate of inflation, I view that more as constructive development rather than a sign of any early warning signs about concerns about the macroeconomic environment. I'd say the issue about the Fed falling behind the curve, that really depends upon what you believe the Fed is targeting. In my opinion, what the Fed is going to be more tolerant of this time around is a little bit above target inflation. Remember, their target level is about 2%, because they recognize the fact that demand remains constrained globally, and we still are working through these global deflationary pressures, means that the Fed doesn't want to take the risk of allowing deflation pressures to fester and become a deeper problem for the U.S. economy. So if they're going to err on either side, it's likely to be a little bit more tolerant of higher inflation rather than lower inflation.
Next, we asked Mark Haefeli, UBS Global Chief Investment Officer, the same question about the performance of the Fed.
We don't think the Fed is behind the curve yet based on what we've seen. Inflation should rise. More people are getting jobs. The unemployment rate is falling. We've had a lot of the commodity deflation, such as the low oil prices, go through. But inflation expectations are still a big part of what we call the inflation rate, and they still remain muted at below 2%.
Bloomberg's Pim Fox is the anchor of Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television. Here's his view on the suggestion that the Fed is behind the curve on inflation.
Well, I think that that's got a lot of currency, pardon the pun. If you take a look at the actual numbers over the past 12 months, core consumer prices, now you have to exclude food and fuel, although I don't know why, but this is what the government does. You exclude food and fuel, they say because it's a volatility. If you get rid of those, consumer prices were up 2.3%. Now, this is the biggest year-to-year gain since May of 2012. Now, as you describe, you know, Federal Reserve officials, the preferred measure that they use is one that comes from the Commerce Department because it's tied to the current consumer buying patterns, and they say it better reflects the cost of living. Now, that version was up 1.7%. Okay, so the Federal Reserve's target is 2%. Their preferred measure right now stands at 1.7, and the rest of us are living in a land of 2.3, although I dare say that everybody sees inflation in a variety of things, like food, like energy, things we use. So I think that you make a very decent argument that the Federal Reserve is behind the curve in terms of raising interest rates because their inflation mandate has basically been met, along with their employment mandate. And those are the only two mandates that the bank really has to satisfy.
One of our regular commentators on the Bulletin is Paul Donovan, UBS Global Economist. Paul agrees that there are indeed questions around the Fed strategy when it comes to this.
I think there is certainly a question about what the Fed is doing with regards to inflation. The underlying inflation pressures in the US economy have been steadily rising. Now, of course, we've all been seduced by the fact that oil prices are very low, and the huge drop in the oil price has disguised the fact that we do have these rising underlying pressures. I don't think we're at a stage where we have to be suddenly worrying about sort of 5-6% inflation around the corner or the Fed losing control of the situation. But I think certainly there is an awareness that the Fed seems to be tolerating inflation signals that are moving above the Fed's long-term target.
Now, while some observers have suggested the Fed's behind the curve, a view that seemingly has some currency with some of our contributors, others have suggested that the end of the business cycle is nigh. We asked Mark Haefele whether that's a valid point.
I think that, you know, we had a historic shift with the Fed hiking interest rates, and so that was 7 years of plenty. It was almost exactly 7 years that the Fed had rates at zero. So certainly that has led people to think more about inflation. But I think the most important thing for us was the fact that Janet Yellen came out in her recent remarks at the Economic Club in New York and kind of got a little bit ahead of the debate or put her arms around this inflation debate by saying that it's hard for economists to measure inflation and that some of these factors could be transitory. They may not get it right. And that gave us some confidence that she's willing to let inflation exceed the 2% target for some time to make sure that the economy is doing well before the Fed took more drastic action. And I think another important part, the Fed has spoken a lot recently about work they've done about the limits of the divergence that can come about from what Fed policy is and what central bank policy is around the world. And given where inflation rates are around the world, it's going to be hard for the U.S. rate to pick up too much.
And what credence does Paul Donovan give to the notion?
I don't think we're suggesting that we're at the end of the cycle. Inflation very rarely kills a cycle unless central banks are required to really sort of slap down prices with a very aggressive, restrictive policy. And I don't think anybody is suggesting that is likely in the next couple of years. What we have, I think, is a situation where the U.S. labor market has, for several sectors, reached full employment, particularly for skilled and semi-skilled workers. I think for unskilled workers, the labor market is still very, very difficult. But for skilled and semi-skilled workers, we've now got full employment. That means that pay pressures are building, wage costs are starting to rise, and with that, we start to see some rising prices as companies try and pass on the higher wage costs to the consumer.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll ask, how good are analysts and economists at reading the inflationary tea leaves? Next up, we're asking, how good are analysts and economists at reading the inflationary data? UBS global economist Paul Donovan, perhaps understandably, sets a lot of store by his fellow economists' ability to read the runes when it comes to the issue.
When it comes to inflation, economists are generally very good at reading this. Other analysts are not. And this isn't just arrogance on the part of economists. This is because economists know exactly what goes into the inflation figures. The problem is that other people who are not applying rigorous economic analysis to the data tend to rely on instinct, which is fair enough. We all rely on instinct. But the problem with that is that when we rely on instinct, we tend to stress the prices of things that we buy on a very frequent basis, food, petrol or gasoline for the car, that kind of thing. And so the prices of high-frequency purchases tend to shape ordinary people's expectations and perceptions of inflation, whereas economists are saying, well, yes, you know, the price of food may have gone down, but the price of the television that you buy once every 3 years is going up on average, and therefore, you know, there is an inflation pressure coming from something you don't buy very often. Of course, nobody can remember what they paid for a television they bought 3 years ago. The chances are you can remember what you paid for the chocolate bar in the company vending machine yesterday morning.
And what about Mike Ryan? How does he assess the ability of analysts and economists to make sense of the data and to strategize accordingly?
I would say that
we have better tools at our disposal now to measure inflation. I mean, just think about what's happening now in terms of the ability to capture pricing information right now and to be able to utilize that information in real time to understand what's happening in terms of pricing dynamics. That's a transformational development. You know, think about every time you scan an item now, the ability to capture that information and to reflect that in real-time pricing dynamics. That obviously helps us in terms of gaining a sense of what's happening in pricing pressures. It also is really important because it allows us to understand when there's substitution going on. So one of the things that obviously impacts inflation is not just the price of goods for any fixed basket of goods, but also if consumer patterns of behavior change with regard to the basket of goods they actually make purchase. So for example, if I were to see a certain good price starts to rise, we know that what will happen is that people will tend to purchase less of that and substitute other, perhaps cheaper goods. But it's hard to capture that because you don't know necessarily how consumer behavior is changing in real time. But now as we're able to capture more of that information, we can get a better sense of what the substitution effect is, how much less of a certain type of good or how much more of another type of good consumers are purchasing. So we actually get a better handle on inflation. Now, that doesn't mean that we have perfect foresight. One of the things we're going to always be surprised by is when there is spikes in certain types of prices because of shortages of certain types of goods or disruptions in supply, or when there's a sudden surge in demand on the part of consumer for certain types of material or certain types of goods. So there's always going to be elements that we can't capture, even under the best of circumstances in terms of information gathering. But I do think the metrics are better now for getting a sense of what the underlying rate of inflation really is.
Mike Ryan there. We asked our experts this week to look to the future next and take a best guess at what might lie around the corner for the US when it comes to inflation. Here's Paul Donovan again.
I believe that the consumer price inflation measure, which is the measure that financial markets tend to track most closely, is going to continue to be pushed higher, particularly as the effects of the lower oil price fade. The core inflation, which strips out some, though not all, of the effects of changing oil prices, is still edging higher. And this is because of housing costs, this is because of education costs, and it's because of healthcare costs. Now, those three areas make up more than half the consumer price inflation index. You'll notice that none of them are really subjected to global forces. They're all very, very local. So it's predominantly about what's going on in the US economy. And all of these factors are starting to rise. So I believe that the consumer price measure, which is what markets are looking for, is going to be moving somewhat higher. It has been surprising markets on the upside so far this year. I think that markets are adjusting to that, but there is now an expectation of core inflation continuing to move higher.
What's Mike Ryan's best guess at what could lie ahead?
I think if we really want to understand what the underlying inflation rate is in the U.S. economy, we have to first and foremost focus on what's happening in terms of wages and salaries. Because if you look at CPI and you break it down by its component parts, a lion's share of that is driven by wages and salaries. So we're going to focus very closely on what's happening in labor markets. Now, here what we're seeing is the continued improvement in labor market conditions is gradually pushing wage pressure higher. That is, more people are working, the demand for labor continues to grow, and therefore eventually what you start to see is the price that labor is bid up in the form of higher wages and salaries. Now, I will say that's partially being offset by the fact that for the first time now we're starting to see entrants re-enter the workforce. In other words, labor force participation, which had been in steady decline over the last couple of years, has actually trended higher over the last 6 months. That will provide some relief in terms of pricing pressures because as the businesses demand more workers, you're actually starting to see a number of individuals re-enter the labor force. So I think that should keep the level of wage and salary inflation in check as we start to see, again, a broader pool of labor participants.
When it comes to gauging inflation and planning ahead accordingly, are instincts or analysis the most important thing? In Pim Fox's view, and what do his feelings and data mining respectively tell him about what could be on the way next?
I think the best part of the whole inflation picture to really pay attention to are wages. If you see an increase in wages, and we haven't really, right? I mean, the trend line is, if you talk about trend lines, is lousy for wages, particularly for unskilled labor. You have a whole political movement in the United States now to raise the minimum wage. I think That exists also in the United Kingdom. California just enacted the $15 an hour minimum wage. If that increase spurs larger increases and people are able to take home more money, then you might see the kind of inflation that gets people worried, because that kind of inflation then begets competition for jobs. If you have to pay higher wages, that means there's not enough people to take over the job positions. You've got to pay people more to keep them. That can create a kind of, you know, round and round chase your tail scenario. But having said that, you know, we've got many years of stagnant wages to make up for. And this is even before you recognize that the new health care mandates that were put into place by the Affordable Care Act mean that many people who did not have health insurance are now finding that they are going to have to spend anywhere from maybe $300 to $450 a month to pay their own insurance premiums. So that may not show up as inflation, because it isn't as if it's an item that is increasing in cost, but it's a brand new cost that people are certainly going to have to bear.
Finally on today's program, we sought the view once more of Mark Haefeli. What's Mark's best guess at what's around the corner for the United States, and how do he and his colleagues arrive at that view?
I think if we really want to understand what the underlying inflation rate is in the U.S. economy, we have to first and foremost focus on what's happening in terms of wages and salaries. Because if you look at CPI and you break it down by its component parts, a lion's share of that is driven by wages and salaries. So we're going to focus very closely on what's happening in labor markets. Now, here what we're seeing is the continued improvement in labor market conditions is gradually pushing wage pressure higher. That is, more people are working, the demand for labor continues to grow, and therefore eventually what you start to see is the price that labor is bid up in the form of higher wages and salaries. Now, we'll say that's partially being offset by the fact that for the first time now we're starting to see entrants re-enter the workforce. In other words, labor force participation, which had been in steady decline over the last couple of years, has actually trended higher over the last 6 months. That will provide some relief in terms of pricing pressures, because as the businesses demand more workers, you're actually starting to see a number of individuals re-enter the labor force. So I think that should keep the level of wage and salary inflation in check as we start to see, again, a broader pool of labor participants.
And that's Mark Haefeli bringing us to the end of this 79th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.